Yo, yo, what's up, guys?
Hello, hello.
Thank you for joining us. We are live at the Paris Motor Show 2018.
For a lovely special edition.
Special.
Of the Gestalten podcast. And we want to give you a hands-on first review on what we have seen over the past couple of days.
Yep.
We are just at the end, almost at the end of the second day of the show.
Yes.
And we've been wandering around all day yesterday.
And today, in fairness, we could have probably done this show in half a day.
Pretty much.
It's that small. And there aren't that many new cars on show here today or yesterday. No new unveils that are really, really worth any type of importance. Now, it's a shame because, for example, that BMW 3 Series is a really, really important car for BMW. From a design perspective, it's unfortunately nothing to write home about. There's been some disappointments. There's been some really big, like not big surprises, but some surprises as well unveiled in these last few days, particularly yesterday. Let's just talk about some highlights here at the show. I think it's important, obviously, to note first off that Paris isn't usually this quiet.
Used to be quite big back in the day, a few years ago still.
Well, now, unfortunately, 14 manufacturers have decided to sit out the show this year, which makes it quite compact. From a walking around perspective, therefore quite manageable. You can walk around the show in a half a day and pretty much see everything, but then at the same time, it's a bit sad because there are some empty spaces or spaces that are being filled by suppliers where there used to be OEM manufacturers like Ford and Volkswagen, for example.
Exactly, and let's be honest. Like, what we really liked about the show so far is, yes, it is very, very compact. That's not really the problem, and we can kind of go along with that. What we really liked is we always bump into people.
Oh yeah,
That was the super nice part about this year, because we only had a very, very few amount of highlights.
Mm.
The people were gathering around them. We saw a lot of people from the design community, of course, being around here. It doesn't matter if their companies are showing something or if they just come here for fun. So one has to say this was a really, really cool part of the Paris show, is that we saw a lot of people and that. We also got a little bit of feedback from the podcast, which was really, really nice.
Yeah.
But the real big star of the show was, of course, the Peugeot e-Legend. There was no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just to kind of second what you've just said, walking around the show and talking to people is always great. I mean, no one really needs an excuse to come to Paris, right? But it's always really nice to talk to people and to see everyone walking around. But I think unanimously, it was... the star of the show was definitely the Peugeot e-Legend concept coming from Gilles Vidal's team and indeed Matthias Hassan, who is head of concept car design over there at Peugeot. I mean, there's so many things to talk about on that car. It's just, there's so many little details to discover, so many things that, when you look at the car, there's a first read, which is something quite simple and quite, romantic about it, seeing as it does reference, a Pininfarina design from 1969 and, a heyday of automotive design, but it does so in a very resolutely modern way.
Yeah, and I think we had a lot of these kind of conversations in the beginning with comparing it to the Nissan IDX, which came out a few years ago as a concept and never really made it into production. And investigating it a little bit further and being able to look inside in detail. You could say there are some clues and some things that are very, very similar to it. But at the same time, the interior is, I think, what really, really stands out. I mean, the exterior is, it's well done. Mm. The details are quite nice, but when we talk about this car, and I think what we will remember from it is the interior, because there's so many details, they're so astonishingly well executed.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing wrong about this whole thing. I mean, everybody you spoke to, as a team, they all said the interior is incredible. There is obviously you can like the trims pretty much with the velour trims and all these things, but just the whole over, the whole idea of the interior is absolutely fantastic and absolutely well done to Peugeot and Gilles' team for that, because that really what stole the show. I don't think it was the exterior. I think it was really the interior.
Well, I would argue that it was a combination of both. I mean, look, when I was the first to jump on that kind of bandwagon. I mean, the IDX, is well familiar to the both of us. We know its designer quite well. And when I saw that car, it immediately smacked to, reminded me of the IDX because it was fresh in my mind from 5 years back. It was a big disappointment as well to me that Nissan never pursued, building that. I think there was a missed opportunity. But if you look at, some other cars that were created by Lancia, by other makes during that period, there is a lot of similarity in terms of typology. Now, judging from photos is never a good thing because, when you're close to a vehicle and you see something in person, forget about out in natural light and moving, because that's really the setting that a vehicle should be experienced. But just to see this car in person on the stand, there are so many sublime details to the exterior that are not readily apparent in photos or in video, the video that I've seen anyway. So it was really full of surprises, and I think that's what I love about the car. The exterior design is really great. It's definitely pointing towards a new kind of surface treatment for the brand that they're going to push
hopefully,
forward.
Hopefully.
According to Gilles Vidal, it is. That is what he told me. So I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of the next steps for Peugeot. At the same time, this is a concept, like you said, where the interior is as brilliant, if not more, than the exterior, because there's so many cool things going on inside. I mean, I love the juxtaposition of different colors and materials, for example. You've got wood, you've got these really technical screens all over the place, but it's not in your face. It's not like overly present where it dominates the environment. It's very, very plush as well, thanks to the velvet, which we're seeing a lot in homes and furniture design coming back. So it makes reference to the past, but again, in a very, very modern and contemporary way, and I think was definitely the star of the show.
Indeed, and it is, it's a great kind of concept car of the show because it is very French, and I think, there's not really much more to say. It was just absolutely great. We all enjoyed it. And it was clearly like the runaway winner, I would say.
Yes,
even though there were a bunch of other things that we did like. Yeah. And I would say one I was really surprised of was the Skoda Vision RS concept.
Yes,
was actually really, really cool, and it had a little bit of the feeling this is what the new GTI should be like.
Yeah, well, it's basically, I mean, Skoda's doing so well, across the board, selling great, designs are looking fabulous. I think it's really coming into its own, and it has, under Joseph Caban, really it became quite a significant player within the Volkswagen Group. I mean, it's important to know also that in terms of, just revenue, it is a cash cow for Volkswagen. It's the second most successful brand under Audi for the entire Volkswagen Group in terms of revenue generation. So obviously, the Volkswagen Group and the people in the higher up positions are realizing how important this brand is, and they've essentially allowed it to create a competitor to the Golf. Now that is quite significant in its own right, but then again, it also, whilst this concept is, it looks very near production, right?
Yeah.
There are some extremely interesting elements where, for example, the interior being made from vegan, it's very forward looking.
Yeah.
But then, from an aesthetic perspective, it's also quite appealing. And I hope they don't stray too far from, this, of course, still has the concept car moniker.
Sure.
The seats, for example, probably won't make it into production as they look now with this, fantastic frame. So there's certain elements that we may unfortunately, not make it in, cost cutting, whatever, whatever it may be. But the fact that they are building something like this and the vision for the brand, I think is quite strong. So yeah, it's very, very appealing, that car.
And very surprising as well, I think, in terms of the context. And moving on a little bit in terms of context, we have Renault celebrating the 120th anniversary this year, and they were here in Paris with pretty much a range of their concept cars. So we had the Easy Pro, We had the Easy Go as yes. well, and now we've seen the Easy Ultimo.
Right.
Yes, we have this old joke around here.
No, it's interesting.
We're not so sure about the Easy Ultimo, to be very, very honest.
No, I mean, look, I think in terms of celebrating our 120-year anniversary, you know, on the stand itself, they had some seriously old cars, maybe even Renault's first car. They had a very significant product for the brand, which was the Renault 5. And all in between, basically, that, the rest of the show stand was taken up by this very future-looking, you know, concepts for the Renault brand. So all the ones that you've just mentioned, basically taking up the majority of space on the stand. And then on either side, kind of peppered by these production cars that you're available to buy. So I think from a stand design perspective, it was quite nice over there at Renault. Now, what I don't like about the... there are a lot of things that I do like about the Easy Ultimo, right? Let's not get it wrong. The name, not one of them. But I think it's interesting to show kind of where Renault could go potentially in the luxury space. Now, what bothers me is that it's against the company's, you know, that's not really what... Renault does not stand for luxury. I don't think it ever, you know, that's not... It's against the kind of what the values of the company are, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, it creates this, it's showing this bandwidth. So with the Easy Go, it was very much a public transportation vehicle. Now you're seeing the other end of the spectrum, which is this Easy Ultimo, which is a three-passenger car on the exact same platform. Yeah. So the same wheelbase, essentially the same length and width, but extremely low. You're basically sitting on the ground, so ingress egress to this thing is quite limited, you know, and it looks like a luxury hotel room in the interior minus the television.
Or as some other people have said, it looks like a moving casket as well.
It could.
No, but I think the problem about the whole thing is like, you know, it was actually the first time for us. We were talking about the Easy Pro. Mm. This was the first time we saw the Easy Pro. They had one over here, which was pretty much a rolling and actually fully functional cafe.
Yeah.
And when you see that, you know, it fits exactly what Renault is kind of like, and it's kind of what they represent as a brand as well. It's, you know, it's not too posh. It's really something that is quite functional, especially wandering around here in Paris. You know, we see loads of them that have these little, like, you know, let's say they have some dashes and, like, you know, like they bump into each other and the fender benders and everything. So, but that's part of Renault as well, you know, and then you see this kind of Ultimo thing. And it didn't really fit 100% for me, unfortunately, especially compared to the other ones. And the Easy Pro, by far the best one. Easy Go was quite nice as well. We saw that some time ago already.
Yes.
But it was not 100% the greatest thing
we've
seen here.
There were some appealing design elements, you know, like I like the way that Renault, across this Easy range actually, is treating the lighting where they, it's kind of like almost like a encapsulation of the main body. So on the, you know, you've got, especially on the Easy Pro and Easy Go, you've got these kind of separate pods and then the lamps kind of acting as clamps. So it's kind of like a safety reinforcement thing to the entire, I don't, you know, we've talked about the way that they enclose the wheels, that, you know, you're not particularly fond of that, I know. I think it's interesting, you know, I mean, there is a family identity thing going on there. But I did really like the Easy Pro, definitely, in terms of, you know, showing what a potentially fully autonomous vehicle could do for some mobile businesses. And in the sense, like, you know, coffee shop.
Yeah.
They had another one that was a delivery vehicle as well, both of which were shown at Hanover. Or I think it was late last month. So that was really an interesting one. The Easy Ultimo is, you know, again, there's some interesting treatments, particularly to the DLO, the way that it's covered. I like the interior, you know, in that it's high luxury and it's actually devoid of screens, it must be said. It's a purely analog space. So, you know, you can actually mess around with a personalized iPad within there, and there is a way for information to be displayed on the front windscreen, for example, from within the vehicle. But otherwise, you know, it's purely analog. So it's kind of like a way of
back to the roots.
Yeah, getting people back together talking instead of sitting across the table one another at dinner with each of you looking at your cell phones type thing.
Yeah.
So it's it was interesting from that perspective.
All right, let's move on.
Yep.
We are very, very close to one of our favorite spots actually here in Paris, which is Ferrari.
Ah, yes.
And we had a lovely conversation yesterday with Flavio Manzoni.
Yep.
And he was very, very kind to give us a very, very good overview of the Monza SP1 and SP2.
Yes.
We had a very, very heated discussion with it, which one is better. And we have to say, we saw it on pictures, we thought it was beautiful on pictures. When you see it in real life, my God, that surfacing is really, 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 really beautiful. I mean, we spoke to some of other people, also from sports car manufacturers. They were standing right next to us. And the simplicity of that car, the sheer, like, just the beauty, as mentioned, the surfacing. It's just purely back to the roots, almost like Ferrari. And we didn't expect it to be that good even in the flesh from what we saw in the pictures.
Yeah.
The pictures were great already. SP1, yeah. SP2. You know, Eric, which one are you going to take?
It's very sensual. Now, initially, I was like, you know, everybody wants company, I think. You know, when you're traveling around, it's quite nice to have that passenger seat, even if you don't use it, you know, to know that it's there, to know that someone can join you in on the journey. It's about sharing. Now, Flavio Manzoni really likes the Egoista, which is the selfish one and the single seat one, and I must say the colorways on that car are brilliant. But again, you know, these cars are, you know, very unique, limited edition vehicles already spoken for. I think either one you can go for, and the colorways, for example, you can personalize this to your heart's content. And you know, it's really the way that people are moving. Let's face it, I mean, Ferrari led the game in terms of creating these highly bespoke one-offs. Then Lamborghini joined in, and, you know, Aston Martin as well. Now, there's a lot of companies offering this, especially at the high end. That's really the epitome of luxury, you know, as Rolls-Royce did with the one-off Sweptail.
Yeah.
But from a surfacing perspective, it's really lovely to see Ferrari returning to purity. This is elegance. This is really like controlled, very emotional, very voluptuous and sensual surfacing. And I think it's really, really well done. And seeing these cars in person is really, yeah, definitely was worthwhile.
Yeah.
And I, you know, which one do I like? I like the one that you can have, you know, take someone along for the ride in. But, you know, I like them both, you know, and I really like the colorways of the SP1C in that car in the flesh as well. But yeah, it's a great project that they embarked upon, and it's also great to see them returning to this very subtle, like, you know, simple kind of purity. I think we're going to see more of that coming out of Ferrari. You know, blending it in with modern elements, for example, like the light band at the rear, you know, the very modern lamps, you know, it's not entirely kind of like, you know, bringing it back to whatever, like the 60s and, you know, Ferrari design, but it's very modern, but again, very pure. And I think it's very, very well done.
Yeah, well done to Flavio and the team.
Yes,
and before we start talking about, I mean, you mentioned the BMW already. Before we start talking about some things that we didn't like, maybe that we missed as well. Quick couple of shout outs as well. We saw actually a couple of Pebble Beach cars around here, which was the Silver Arrow from Mercedes, the EQ Silver Arrow, as well as the Audi PB18. Is it just that? I think it's just that.
No, the Devo is right behind you.
Bugatti
Devo as well.
The Devo's around here as well.
If you missed going to Pebble Beach, just get on a plane and come to Paris. They're all here. Everything that was shown, minus the Infiniti, but all the German manufacturers have brought their Pebble Beach Star show cars. And they're all here.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously what Martin just highlighted, you know, it's nice to see them in this environment. It's a bit different than seeing them, for example, the Silver Arrow. You know, looks quite nice on the display, as does the PB18 from Audi. It's a different setting, I prefer seeing them out in the open, but it's better not to see them on grass. So Audi's on this kind of like fake racetrack kind of thing, which looks cool. And the Bugatti isn't in as flashy of a display, unfortunately. It's nice to see them again, and the fact that these cars took for a lot of time and effort and money, really, to develop, they really should be making the rounds. So it's good to see them here.
So let's talk a little bit about the downside of the show.
Yeah.
And I want to start with something that is literally just, you know, opposite of where we're sitting at the moment, which is the lack of Infinity Nissan, I would like to say. There's this really weird thing. We were asking a few people at Renault, and it's like, oh, so where's this Infinity car that, you know, was teased on Instagram and everything? And there's like, yeah, Infinity's not here, Nissan's not here, like, you know, I don't know what you're looking for. And then we found pretty much a little stand of Infinity, which was run by a dealer.
Is it?
From what we know, at least.
All right.
And they are showing this special edition that was designed in London by Matt Weaver and the team, which is called the Infinity Project Black S.
Yes.
Yeah, which is actually really, really cool.
Yeah.
But it's an utter disappointment the way it's shown, because it's somewhere off at the end of hole one, and you know, people just pass by it because it's right in the middle of the Maseratis and the Lamborghinis and all of the production cars.
Yeah.
There's nothing special here, and the people think this is just like, you know, a tuned up version that has nothing to do with Infinity whatsoever, and that's really just a big disappointment, because the car is pretty cool.
It is unfortunate. I mean, sometimes things like this happen. It's a shame that it isn't being represented. You know, if you don't know what it is, you wouldn't think about it or give it a second look. You just walk right by thinking exactly what Martin said, is that it's some aftermarket tuner thing, not something that you could actually buy from a dealer. Now, I think it's quite nice. Yes, it's interesting to see. I like the colorways on that car. I like what they're doing with the yellow bits. Yeah. Not many other manufacturers are.
We have to say that the stitching is mainly yellow. There's like little details that are, you know, colored in a very, very neon yellow color, and it's really like, if you would put it into like the show stand like he has right next to it, if you would put it onto a proper show stand, I think it would stand out. But like this, it really looks like a cheap aftermarket when you go to Geneva and you go to this one hall like where all the aftermarket parts are.
I mean, like you said, it's a shame, because it's a competitor to Mercedes's AMG brand and BMW's M. So it's, you know, it's showing that, you know, Infiniti is actually taking their performance credentials, you know, not just throwing and slapping their name on some Formula cars, but actually doing something which will equate, hopefully, to performance. It's a shame the way the car is displayed in the end.
So talking about a little bit of shame, you already mentioned the BMW 3 Series.
Yeah.
And the way this is actually presented, was we were not really impressed by the whole thing. I mean, the BMW stand itself, there was nothing new. They showed the iX3 again, which was already terrible back in China when they first showed it. It's still terrible now. And they are just not pushing in the right direction. I mean, it's really sad. It could have been much better. And also adding on top of that, from my perspective, I think Mercedes could have done a little bit better as well. I think some of the stuff that they've shown were actually quite cool. Still not so 100% sure about the EQC, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it that one?
Yeah.
But also, I would say Audi was a little bit disappointing in terms of the cars that they have shown. It seemed all very, very crammed. And I would say, like, you know, probably the biggest downfall for me was a little bit of the show design, or like the show stand design.
Absolutely.
Everything is crammed. Everything has to be put in one place. It's not really like an enjoyable walk around. It's just like, it's too much.
No, you know, I agree with you. I mean, this, let's not forget, this venue is actually quite vast. There are 7 halls here, not all of which are being used, certainly not by manufacturers. Some have suppliers in there, but I agree with you entirely. It seems like manufacturers have certainly saved or skimped on show stand design, and you know, you can see it everywhere. And you know, and it's a shame, because the way that cars are, or, you know, products, new products are shown, really does say a lot about the story of those new cars. And so, I mean, I really actually quite liked the new A1. I think, you know, the Audi, the little car, is actually growing up, and You know, it's it looks more masculine. It's, you know, I think it's a nice new addition. Definitely better than the outgoing model.
Yeah.
Mercedes-Benz, yeah, I mean, you know, it's the layout of these stands, unfortunately, was not great. You know, they had the new smart concept yesterday over in the corner. People walked by it, didn't even see it. It was like, and it's quite compact, but that's not an excuse.
Yeah. I think, and by the way, just to add that, it was actually a nice car. It was not bad. Like, there were some really, really cool details in that. Should have probably added that on earlier. That was actually very, very nice. And
it's an interesting car. I mean, it's you know, I don't know. I mean, it does reference certain vehicles in you know, Saab's history. And I mean, let's not forget, you know, Smart is hugely successful here in Paris and in urban city environments like this because of its compact nature. And this is just another kind of way to show that, you know, the brand's been around for a while. It is ideally suited to these urban environments and like Paris. And it's just a little fun, bit of fun as well to remember these former vehicles that they've produced that were also little convertibles. But yeah, I mean, in terms of stand design, you know, it's lacking some, which is a shame.
Yeah.
In terms of manufacturers, it's lacking some, which is a shame. So, you know, Paris isn't what it was, unfortunately. And I think, you know, it's just kind of a further reinforces kind of the conversation that we were having before in terms of the traditional motor show and the fact that, you know, it's becoming increasingly kind of irrelevant,
yeah.
You know, in this space. Yeah.
So let's hope it will survive and that we're going to come back in 2 years' time.
Yes.
But just to wrap this up, short podcast today, because we have a little bit of time pressure as well. We have to get back.
Yep.
But
trains to catch.
Trains to catch, indeed. Eric, give me your best car of the show.
My best car, obviously, is the Peugeot E-Legend, hands down. I spent quite a bit of time looking at it, spent quite a bit of time speaking to the designers of it, and yeah, I just love the story.
Cool. So I would agree, but I wanna say something else. I'm gonna take the SP2, the Ferrari Monza SP2. Great car, blew me away, and it's going in production. 499 will be made, so I'm a big production fan. So let's do it. But in that kind of sense, thanks for listening to us, special edition. We will be back. Maybe next week, maybe the week after, we'll see what's going to happen. But yeah, thanks for listening as always to the Gestalten podcast. And this was the very special edition of the Paris Motor Show. And we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Speak soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.